Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
We're here once more. It's Saturday night. It's the second edition this week of the Hour of Truth. We were here last night with Lloyd Sloan and Keith Carmichael. We had a very good chat. If you missed that show, you want to go back and catch the podcast. It was enlightening. It was educational. It was entertaining. And it was great. It was a great show. Lloyd will be along again tonight. We're going to talk about some amendments to the Constitution that we need to do. We're going to talk about how to go about doing that. We're going to talk specifically about the State Rights Amendment. So here we are tonight, folks. We're sitting at a, you know, there are turning points. There are turning points in the spirit of the United States of America. There are times when history dictated that there be a shift. One of those times was the convention in Philadelphia, where the outcome was the Constitution of the United States. That was a unique point in history, a point that could never, ever, ever be reestablished. What I'm saying is that if it were not for the unique people there at the unique time, under the unique circumstances, what came out of that meeting would not have been. And what came out of that meeting was the strongest form of government by the people that had ever been laid on paper to that point in world history. And it worked very, very well. And then a civil war tore the country apart, and I'm not talking about the Civil War being one of the unique points in history, but the Reconstruction era after the Civil War, where people felt, I guess, that things had to change, and more power began shifting to the federal government. You had the Reconstruction era amendments, beginning with, and most critically, the 14th. The 14th Amendment changed the landscape in this country, followed quickly by the 15th and devastatingly the 16th, one of the most devastating amendments to ever hit paper. And then along comes the Progressive Era. And things shifted radically again. And you get the New Deal. You get the 17th Amendment. You get the 18th and 19th. The 17th Amendment was another devastating amendment that came about, once again, because of the people involved and a unique time in history. We're at another one of those unique times in history. We're at a point where states cumulatively are finally fed up with the federal government. States are talking about nullification. States are doing nullifications. States are saying, standing up and saying to the federal government, we've had enough. And now the time is ripe. for us to take back the government. I, for one, am evolving on this. I got on the idea of a convention of the states 4.5 or 5 years ago. I began pushing for this. There are blogs that I wrote. There are shows that I did long before Mark Levin even began researching his book. But I couldn't find much interest in it. I am somewhat pleased that Levin has finally gotten on the bandwagon and really riled up a lot of public outcry for change, a lot of public interest in how we go about changing, and kind of solidified the public sentiment. At the same time, I'm concerned. And I said a year ago, in the wake of the book by Levin actually hitting bookshelves, be very careful, people. Be very, very careful, because what's going to happen next is you're going to see national-sized movements with lots of money and lots of power behind them. Not that we don't need some coordination between the states. That's going to be entirely necessary to get this thing done. But that is fertile ground for people who would try to take control of this process for their own means. We want to concentrate on state level and grassroots organizations. Yes, we want to coordinate them together. Yes, we want them to work together. Yes, we want them to be in dialogue with one another, state to state and organization to organization. We want to have discussions like the one we had last night with Keith and Lloyd. We want to have them openly, and we want to have them at some times heatedly. There was no lack of heat in that upper chamber in Philadelphia. On two occasions, that thing almost came to a dead stop. People almost went home from that thing empty-handed on at least two occasions. So there's nothing wrong with open discourse and disagreement on these things. What I want us to be careful of is that we don't waste this unique point in history, that we don't walk away from this time empty-handed, because brothers and sisters, just like in Philadelphia, the cost of failure is going to be dear. It's going to be bloody. That's my little monologue for starters. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to see who's on the phones. I think one of them is going to be Lloyd. I'll be right back.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas.
To cold climb, come springtime, so let me hear you say.
Okay, we're back, I think. Can you hear me, Keith? Can you hear me, Lloyd?
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
Lloyd's here with us tonight. Keith's here with us tonight. And we're going to – I had to change browsers real quick, so I want to apologize for anything. My Firefox just quit working right in the middle of me trying to do something. But we're back now. Okay, Lloyd Sloan is really the I'm not going to call him the father of the state repeal amendment, because he'll be the first to tell you that the original idea belongs to someone else. But I am going to call him the master of it. He brought this idea to my attention a significant amount of time ago, like 3 years. We've had him on several times to talk about it. Lloyd, quickly give any first-time listeners an idea of what the state repeal amendment is all about.
Yeah, okay, that's a good start, I guess. And incidentally, I did hear your opening monologue. I thought it was a masterful brief history of the U.S. Constitution.
Well,
I was very entertained by the monologue. So the only thing I'll say is 16th Amendment should not be lumped with the Civil War. That's a progressive amendment. Push that thing about 40 years later, and then you get the history.
Oh, did I say the 16th with the Civil? I certainly meant to lump that in with the progressive era, yeah.
Yeah, that goes with the progressives. Don't blame that one on Lincoln.
Nope.
You can blame some
nope.
of the others on
yeah.
it. That's a progressive amendment. So,
although the Civil War was the first attempt to tax income, by the way.
Yes, they did have an income tax. It only taxed the highest levels, and it was that I believe it's either a 2% or a 3% income tax, and it's above what today would be, you know, like $1 million or something. I mean, at the time
right.
it wasn't that high, but you know, you can't really compare their numbers to ours, obviously.
So anyway, go ahead.
Apologize. We presume that the basic problem is a breakdown in federalism. We've got too much centralization of power in Washington. We want to transfer a lot of what we're doing in Washington back to the state. We have an underlying flaw in the U.S. Constitution. It's often missed. It's very subtle. And it deals with the question, who decides what the Constitution means in the end? Who can enforce this document? Suppose they don't follow it. Now, typically, we've gone to the Supreme Court for that. That's a mistake, and the reason being you can't let somebody be a judge in their own case. It's clearly biased. So no one is a fit judge in their own case. You cannot let the federal government be the judge of whether or not they themselves broke the Constitution. That flaw has been there a long time. It's, as you mentioned nullification earlier, that was noticed very early by most of your nullification people as a flaw. Madison had an idea back in the 1830s for a constitutional amendment that, you know, recognizing that basic problem, we would let not just one state, but a special majority of states repeal an act of Congress that either they thought was unconstitutional or they just didn't like. And that is the state repeal amendment idea. It lets a representative, it empowers a representative majority of states to repeal, void, nullify, negate any federal law or regulation in any whole or part, then undo it. And what's a representative majority? It's a majority of states, which would mean 26, that also represent a majority of American people. That's your state repeal amendment. It is a massive transfer of power. It's like putting judicial review in the hands of the states, and it is a huge transfer of power from the federal government back to the states.
Yes, I liked the idea. I read about it after Lloyd brought it to my attention, and it kind of grew on me. And as it's grown on me, it's begun an evolution in my thinking about an amendment convention. I initially was one who just thought, well, we can just have a convention and people can get together and they can bring their ideas, or they could just get together and talk about ideas. But I am evolving to agree that, in the first place, an amendment convention is dangerously tenuous if you don't have people coming to the convention, appointed to the convention as delegates, with an idea in mind before they ever get there of what they want specifically in the form of an amendment. I'm further evolving to a point where I believe that we could even have a convention for a specific single amendment. I've said from the beginning that I believe there are only three necessary amendments. The three most important that I see, and in my mind, an amendment convention is a failure unless we get these three. One is the state repeal amendment that Lloyd has just spoken about, and we're going to talk about a little bit of evolution that's come about in that here recently. Two is to repeal the 17th Amendment and put the Senate back in the hands of the states. And third is a repeal of the 16th Amendment and a national consumption tax replacement for the income tax. Now, those are my three pet amendments. I think those three go far enough that I would say they solve 90% of all the problems. I want us to be careful, myself, that we don't over-legislate through the Constitution. And what I mean by that is when we talk about things like abortions and marriages and things like that, we're talking about things that need to work through the legislative process. They don't need to work through the constitutional process, in my mind. And at the same time, I want to make sure that we don't go to the point where we undo what we went there to do. You know, term limits is something that gets talked about a lot. In my mind, term limits strips a state of their power. I think states should have power to limit terms of their senators and even of their representatives. But I'm not sure that's not something that we want in the Constitution. I got a person in the chat room who's saying these are wedge issues, and that's, to some extent, that's true. They certainly serve as wedge issues in the greater political scene. Get in some ideas on what I just said, Lloyd.
I mean, I certainly agree that an amendment first is the right approach. I don't want to imply that I think an amendment convention is an illegitimate thing. It's perfectly legitimate. It's in the Constitution. We've never done it before, but that doesn't mean that it's, you know, I think there's a lot of fear-mongering going on about the convention that is inappropriate. I think there's very little risk of a runaway convention. I think there's almost no risk that we're going to rewrite this Constitution. I mean, frankly, we already have rewritten it. Just American people haven't awakened to that fact as just to how far off this Constitution we really are. That is your real underlying problem. Obviously, I put the state repeal amendment very high. That would be my number one. My number two would be a tax limitation. I agree. I don't want a national sales tax. I like an idea that comes actually from Patrick Henry. I would like to see the federal government prohibited from taxing individuals and people. You know, all, you know, individuals are people, obviously, so somewhat redundant. But I would like to see them not able to tax people except in time of war. They would have to get their revenues from the states. They would have to tax the states uniformly, same percentage, same tax rate for every state, either per capita or based on a percentage of the state's revenues. And then the states could certainly do a sales tax or property tax, income tax, whatever tax they want to do. But it would be a state matter, and the feds would just tax the state. And that's the top two. And I have no problems with the change, you know, on the 17th Amendment. I share the concern. I would like to see us, if we're going to do this, go back to the Articles of Confederation and to the method that was used there. We would go back to one state, one vote in the Senate. The senators would be employees of the state, and they would serve however long the state wants them to serve, possibly a term limit. There was one in the article, so I'll go ahead and mention it, but senators, representatives were prohibited from serving more than 3 years out of any 5 years. And so you could consider that term limit if you want. I'm perfectly content to leave it up to the states, hire and fire as you want, send however many people you want. You're paying for them, and one state, one vote. And I'm curious to get, other people's views on it.
Keith.
Yes. Hey, good evening.
How you doing? Way in there, buddy.
Hey, I got to tell you, I know that we definitely have a master of the state repeal amendment, but I'm going to claim that I promoted it more today than anybody, because I was at the Kansas City Farm Show, and, you know, I should have been other places, but, you know, those folks came through, and I had some cards there. I had a couple of books. I gave away a couple of books, Mark Levin books today. There was a couple of folks. I said, you know, anybody who would stand here and listen to me that long, I've got to give you a free book. And so we had some folks who would stand and really probably talk. I'd hate to even come up with a number, but, you know, probably 50, maybe more, just people who would. Some I knew, some I didn't. Some people took a card and went on their way. Some people really, really were interested, really wanted to know more about Article 5 and this whole process. It's surprising to me how many people really don't have a clue. I hate to say that, but they don't know that it's even in the Constitution and that's even the possibility. And when they, it's really fun, to be honest with you. It's kind of fun to do what I do and sit and talk to people and watch their face when they realize what we have in a national treasure in Article 5. I mean, when they realize that there might be hope, and they, you know, people who are well-read and people who are paying attention realize, and Lloyd couldn't be more correct, we have a runaway Congress, we have a runaway convention every time Congress, you know, they open the door. But, yeah, I want to claim that I promoted it today. I found it, you know, as you talk about what the possibilities are, and the more, I have to be frank, I'm not very knowledgeable about the state repeal amendment, but I can't wait to really dig into what the real history of this is. Lloyd has some, I call them, really interesting tidbits about the source of this, the history of it, and I just can't hardly wait to get into it personally. But when I explain to people about what the possibilities might be, and I found myself today using that over and over again as the primary reason that we should have an Article 5 convention. So this is there's lots of ideas out there. There's, I call them cats, constitutional amendment theories, and everybody's got a cat, and it's pretty hard to herd cats. But this is one that gets people thinking, and they just nod their head and say, man, that would be great. And so I applaud. You know, I have to say, I've never met Lloyd personally. I've heard him on this program and talked to him on the phone and email back and forth. But, you know, we have a resource here in Missouri in Lloyd Sloan, and I don't know what else he does, but I know he does this. I really have a lot of respect for what the research has done, and I'm just going to tell him that publicly. I've been really impressed, You know, I'm above my pay grade most of the time on this subject, but if I want to know, I can count on Lloyd to help me get straightened out on facts.
That's very kind. Yeah, I understand the excitement of that. I tell you the truth. When I first started down this road myself, and I'm an amateur, my background is not in history; it's in economics and math, actually. So I did computer work most of my life. I've always had an interest in history, and unlike you, you know, somebody tells me, well, here's an idea from Patrick Henry or here's an idea from James Mattis, I say, oh, man, what is it? I want to hear it, you know, that kind of stuff. And so that's understandable. I first heard the term Madison's Lost Amendment from Patrick Buchanan. Pat Buchanan was in St. Louis. He mentioned it in a speech. This is 20, 30 years ago, literally. And I thought, oh, I wonder what that is. And it stuck with me all those years. And when a friend asked me to write a book and try and pursue a class, she wanted me to write a book on the Constitution and what might be like a Bible study class only on the Constitution. So for lack of another way to put it, that's a good way. And I thought to myself, you know, I want to write the book, but I want to just write a book that talks about here's all the problems with the Constitution. I want solutions. I'm not going to waste people's time telling people, look at the mess we're in. Because people already know they're in a mess, okay? I mean, you may not be an expert on cars, but you sure know when yours not working, right? So that's the easy part. You can't fix it, but you know there's a problem. That's for sure. And I think most Americans sense we got a problem. And that's why they're so interested in Article 5. It's why they're so interested in amendments, et cetera. And then it just happened that I was researching. I thought, what was that idea that I heard in the past that Madison had? And I started looking for that thing. Just as a possibility, maybe he had something. And I stumbled across some notes by Madison in 1835, and I realized, and about that time, I had seen a repeal amendment idea from Randy Barnett. He published in the Wall Street Journal, and I realized this is the same thing. This is essentially what I don't think other people realized that Madison had originally had this idea. And so, you know, I basically went from there and pieced it together and came up with the language from Barnett and came up with a state repeal amendment idea that if I showed you what Madison proposed, he basically in his notes says, you know, there's a problem here. The feds can't be the final word. We need a way for states to push back. We need an amendment. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But and then he doesn't write down the language himself. He simply says states need a better mechanism in the Constitution for being able to nullify, if you will, federal laws. And if that's not a repeal amendment, I don't know what it is. Madison is the great genius. He is clearly, there really is no father of the Constitution. Madison was sometimes called that in his life. He bristled at it every time. Our Constitution is a bastard child. It has many fathers, I'm afraid. There's a lot of people that contributed to this Constitution. But there is no more important person. I mean, no historian will tell you different. There's no more important person on our Constitution than James Madison. He is essential to it, no doubt about it. And it's a very different country if James Madison is not at that 1787 convention. His heart and soul were in it. And that old man, a year from death, was still thinking about what he could do to help this Constitution. And so I'm very proud to have found that link. Very proud to have found that link. You better believe it. Yeah.
No. I want to ask you a question, Lloyd. Before I do, I want to let you know I'm kind of trying to think what the right word is. I'm a little bit hard to explain, but my point is I get a little emotional about some of the things. If we could do something and just calling it Madison's Amendment and giving him, after all these years, a little bit of credit and honoring, I'm a little bit about honoring the founders. You know, those people didn't have to do what they did. Certainly, as you just said, James Madison, but if we can do something along the way to honor those people and their efforts, it's kind of like veterans. We don't honor them enough. We don't think about them. We don't appreciate them. But those men, the enormous things that they did. You know, Dave, you mentioned in your monologue, and Franklin certainly said at one point that they were like men grasping in the dark and they wouldn't have recognized the political truth if they found it. But at some point, some would give credit to Providence, and certainly they did. But
oh yeah, I think very natural to do.
They definitely would say at some point everything clicked, and they set their differences aside, and something began to happen that you know that they would say was amazing. I wanted to ask you a question. I know Mark Levin has in his book, and I haven't looked at it recently. I was going to get you to kind of summarize because you have a good hold on Levin's take on one of these very similar to this Madison Amendment. What's the differences and what's the similarities?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if people I sent a copy of a spreadsheet I did to Dave Corr, and so if people contact him, they can also get a copy of that same spreadsheet. But specifically, the state repeal amendment idea, Madison's lost amendment idea, is very close to Levin's idea number 10. Okay, I think it's 10 or 9. I'm trying to remember how he numbers them now. I think it's number 10. Yeah, it's number 10. And his idea is also a repeal. He calls it a veto. I think he calls it a state veto or something. Let me bring up the spreadsheet, so I don't want to misquote.
It's number 10. It's number 10
yeah.
of 11, actually.
That makes sense to me. Yeah, I mean, I was remembering that off the top of my head. And I like, in fact, of the three ideas that I had on the top of my list to amend, Levin contains three of those ideas in his 11. So I don't want to discount what Mr. Levin has done here. I do think every single one of his needs improvement before I would adopt it, okay? But that's a different issue. He is at least covered. It's a pretty good list he's got in his 11. I would recommend people read the book on that basis and think about it and say, which of the ones do you think are most important? But number 10, he calls it grant the state's authority to check Congress. Well, what is that? That's a repeal amendment, right? I mean, that's what he calls it. Under his model, 3/5 of the states could veto Congress or any regulation worth over $100 million within a 2-year limit. Okay, I don't like the 2-year limit. I don't like the limit on the regulation. It has to be $100 million. I see problems with that. And I don't like the 3/5 of states formula. I prefer a representative majority of states. I prefer no time limit whatsoever, and I think it's no different than judicial review. You can repeal and do whatever you want. It's carte blanche. Give the states that power, the same as the judges have. Levin has other things in here. He's got a 30-day public notice and other details. I think all those details are best eliminated. I wish Levin would have done as I did and started from Randy Barnett's original repeal idea, to me original. Barnett is an attorney. He is from Georgetown. He's one of the top attorneys in the country as well, constitutional law. He argued the Obamacare case for the good guy side, if you will, okay? And, in fact, it was his argument that the Supreme Court actually agreed with. So the parts that we won were argued by Randy Barnett. He is a very good man. And I took his language that he gave to the Wall Street Journal back in 2010, and I changed his formula from he had a 2/3 formula. I changed his to a representative majority of states and otherwise kept it the same. So, yeah, this is the history, if you will, of the repeal amendment, state repeal amendment idea. And I do believe that Levin's is not as good. Yeah, I mean, he's just not at the same level, in my opinion, as Barnett. And he's got this is typical of lawyers, they don't know how to do the formulas right. I will say that my background's in math, it's in economics. It is simply wrong at this point to use an arbitrary number of states as the deciding factor. What we need to do is do what the founders did, go back to the original Great Compromise that came out of 1787. We must realize that our federalism is based on both states and population. And that's what Congress is. So you have the House and the Senate. And our laws require a majority of states and a majority of the people in order to pass. We should follow that same formula when we do a state repeal amendment, require a majority of states that represent a majority of the people in order to do this. I think that is the magic formula. I think essentially at that point the states are mirroring Congress. So they're basically closer to the people. There's more of them. They're more representative of the people. And yet they are an exact mirror of both houses if you use this formula of a representative majority. And then to give them the judicial review power, essentially, is a great idea. And I'll stop.
I want to ask you one more question. I know you mentioned legislation. You mentioned regulation. I think it's a completely different amendment that Levin talks about, but he talks about the ability of the states to perhaps repeal or at least overturn some type of court decision. Where do we go from there, and how does that compare?
I agree with you. I think it's essential to do it. He does have – that's one of his proposals. Which one? What number is that?
It's number three, establish term limits for Supreme Court justices and supermajority legislative override.
I'm reading from my spreadsheet here, okay? His proposal is to put a 12-year lifetime limit on the Supreme Court and rotate a third of it every 4 years. He also wants to override Supreme Court opinions by three-fifths of Congress or by three-fifths of states, and again, he has a 2-year time limit on that. The first thing I got to tell you is we don't need a constitutional amendment to do these things. That's extremely important to understand. My opinion is, and I think Levin is a little bit weak in this area, so it's worth a debate with him, but if the Constitution is not the problem, please do not amend the Constitution. Okay, don't fix what's not broken. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing a state repeal amendment because I really do believe there is an original flaw in the Constitution that has caused us over time to give too much power to the Supreme Court. They have eventually become the final word on the document because we're missing a check. We're missing a check by the states together on the Fed. That's the flaw I'm trying to address. In this case, technically, Congress right now can override Supreme Court decisions. They have several tools in their arsenal to do this. Congress can also limit the terms of the judges. They don't need an amendment to do that. If they want to appoint judges to 10-year terms, they can do it tomorrow. Congress can limit the jurisdiction of the court. Congress can pack the court and change the number of the judges. Congress could technically completely rearrange the federal judiciary tomorrow. And they could say, you know what, instead of having permanent judges, why don't we just rotate judges in office? Let's do something weird like that. And they could do it tomorrow. They have that power over the courts. We just are not used to them exercising that power. And Levin may be doing a service by proposing an amendment to get this dialogue started, but I really wish Republicans in particular, and I realize, you know, maybe I'm being too partisan here, but I really wish Republicans would start talking this way so we could make this an issue in our elections again. Gingrich tried, if you recall, during the presidential debates back in 2012. He actually mentioned some of this stuff in a debate, and you would have thought that he had advocated, you know, assassinating Supreme Court judges the way people reacted to his comments. But frankly, we have packed the court many times in our history. I'm not kidding. Okay, we haven't done it recently, but Jefferson packed the court, Jackson packed the court, Lincoln packed the court, and Grant packed the court, all of them. So don't go thinking this is illegitimate. It's legit, guys. We should consider doing these things. If the judges are the problem, fire the judges. If the Constitution is the problem, amend it. So that's my reaction to number three from Levin. Is he correct that this is a major problem we must solve? Absolutely. And the one thing that I would add is I like his idea to empower the states, to give the states the same power that Congress has to restrict the courts. So that would require an amendment. So let me back off a little bit and say, if you want states to have the same power that Congress has, that does require an amendment, and I would support that amendment. I would use the same representative majority formula that's in the repeal amendment. And then I would simply give the states the exact same power that Congress has in Article 3, Section 2.
Now, you took your time, but I thought you would get there, and sure enough, you did.
Yeah. You want the 3.2? You want 3.2 restrictions? Yeah.
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 Very good.
Oh, yeah. No, that's where you got to do it. Yeah, that's the right answer. Yeah.
Super. Well, I encourage people to get that book if they haven't gotten Mark Levin's. You know, the first chapter of Levin's book, Mark Levin, The Liberty Amendments, is available online. And you just Google it. You can read the first chapter for free. And really the first chapter is the meat of why we need to do this. And then he spends, obviously, these other chapters on individual amendments and gets whets our appetite a little bit about what the possibilities are if it certainly is a good read. And I'm going to get another set, another box, because anybody that's willing to come up and listen to what I have to say, if they'll stick around long enough, I'm going to give them something. And I thought, well, there's nothing better to give them than a copy of that book, but only under the guise that when they finish, they have to give it to somebody else who loves liberty and loves their country.
Good deal. Good deal, Keith. All right. I'm back where I started, and that's in almost total agreement with Lloyd, myself. You know, the naysayers that Keith deals with all the time, because Keith's going to these, Keith is out at these meetings where he's trying to promote the Convention of the States. So he's always running into the arguments against it. And the fact of the matter is that one of the biggest arguments against it is, you know, the what makes you think the federal government is going to follow a different constitution or an amended constitution any more than they follow the constitution now? My argument, going back to the 17th, repealing the 17th, going back to the state repeal amendment, going back to repealing the 16th, is that's the point. We take the Constitution away from them. They can't break a Constitution that no longer belongs to them. And all of those points in history that I talked about earlier served to take the Constitution further away from us and hand it to the federal government. You know, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution were amendments to limit the federal government. Everything after that were amendments to give power to the federal government. And all of this talk that you get about, we don't need to amend the Constitution, we don't need to fix the Constitution, we don't need to repair the Constitution, we just need to restore the Constitution, that's just the problem is that the Constitution that gives us, the people and the states, the power, the people and the states who own the federal government back the power, that can only be done by amendment, because the Constitution has taken that power from the states. The Constitution as it stands today is a federal government with all of us out here being members of provinces of that government. That's my say on what's been spoken here in the last 44 minutes. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the specific amendments that Levin proposed, and we'll move on from there. Okay, we're back. I don't think we had a break there, but that's all right. The the Blog Talk Radio or my browser, and it's not my browser because I've switched browsers twice now during this show, is running a little bit sluggish. Keith, are you still here?
You bet. You bet.
I can't tell from looking at the soundboard now. Lloyd, are you still here?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I was going to underscore what you said right before the break. I think that's a key insight. I do think there is a legitimate criticism from skeptics who say, you know, if they're not following what we have now, why would they follow amendments? And I think that is actually the key to understanding why the state repeal amendment is valuable and is needed. It does not leave it up to Congress anymore to enforce this. It empowers the states to do it. So
Absolutely. That's
the answer to the question. When people keep asking me that question again and again, I realize they actually don't understand the state repeal amendment yet. I got to try and get it through to them. This is a change in the rules of the game. Okay,
yeah.
we're not letting them be the referees anymore. They ain't calling the shots. The states are going to call the shots. We're changing the rules on them. We're removing that power from them to be the ultimate. We're putting a check in. I'll say it that way, by the states, so that the states can be the enforcers of the Constitution. That is critical to understand.
My question, Lloyd.
Yeah.
Go.
My question is, I'm beginning to understand that. I'm sure that I have not understood it that way, and so I'm trying to get a handle on it. And so I'm trying to understand at what point, you know, can the state repeal a specific item. For example, I mean, if I follow you right, there's things that's been going on for some time, and there's no time limit in this, as maybe Levin would have, but something that's been going on for some time, can the states just come in there and say, okay, this is a piece of legislation, but it needs to be repealed, or is there something new, a new legislation?
If it's an existing law, they can repeal it. It doesn't matter when it passed. Then go back and take a look at the Federal Reserve Act. They say, we don't like this part. There's parts of the Federal Reserve Act that say Federal Reserve cannot be audited. Repeal that. Get rid of it. Okay? Now, you got other things like Obamacare, and maybe they don't want to repeal all of Obamacare. Maybe they say, we just want to get rid of the individual mandate. I don't know what they really, you know, the thing is, you have given them the same flexibility that you give the courts all the time. And frankly, there's no time limit on the courts, and Levin's fine with that. So why he would put a time limit on the states when the courts don't have one is beyond me. I truly want the states to have at least as much review power of the law as the courts have. And I'm not trying to take away that power of the courts, but I am trying to give the states a missing check. We lost the last check that the states have. I think that some people could argue, look, why do the state repeal amendment? Why don't you just get rid of the 17th Amendment? It's better. I would argue the state repeal amendment's better because it's more flexible. I think even in Madison's and Jefferson's time, they realized they wanted something like this, and they recognized that it wasn't just good enough for states to elect senators. I want people to think about this, but I do admit that having the states elect senators again would certainly correct a lot of problems, right? It wouldn't necessarily, however, repeal what's already out there. That, you know, you could block things that way, but you still wouldn't have a sufficient majority necessarily because you'd need the House too. This really takes the power and gives it back to the states directly. This is a serious tool. Whenever you mess with a Constitution and you put a tool of this kind of power in it, granted, you go slow, okay? I'm not going to sit here and tell you. I mean, this is a major change in our system. There's no doubt about it, and I agree with people who would say, hey, you know, you don't really know all the ramifications of this. That's probably true. I mean, if I were going to be honest with people, we don't know all the ramifications. Neither did the founders when they passed the original Constitution. You don't know all the ramifications of putting an income tax in. Frankly, they didn't know all the ramifications of the 17th Amendment or the Prohibition Amendment either. So you do what you think is best at the time. You think it through. If somebody can tell me what they think are the really bad aspects of this, let's fix it. Let's not pass it until we get those things addressed. But we absolutely are missing this check in our system, and no one can deny that for the past 100 years we have done nothing but centralized power in Washington, D.C. If you like that, my guess is you will hate the state repeal amendment. And if you hate that centralization of power, you're going to like this amendment a lot. Now, if somebody else talked about a wedge issue, that's a wedge issue. I think you got somebody from the Internet wrote in and said, this sounds like a wedge issue. You better believe it's a wedge issue. There's going to be some Democrats who like this idea and support it, and there's going to be some Republicans who hate this idea. They are centralizers. They are progressives. Sorry, you know, Mitt Romney, but that's what you are. And he probably not going to like this idea. He wants the power centralized. So this is a wedge issue. This is a major amendment. That's why I put it number one. I don't want people to think that this is a silver bullet. I don't think that one amendment alone can fix all the problems. I think, you know, there's a lot of things that have to happen here. But of all the amendments I've looked at, all the ones Levin's mentioned, other amendments, balanced budget, et cetera, this is most definitely, in my mind, the most powerful tool, the most powerful change we can make.
Dave?
Yeah, I am. Well, I like it. I like the state repeal amendment. I like it. I like it a lot. I rank it right up there with repeal the 17th. I say I have 1, 2, 3. I think SRA, probably the state powers amendment. That's what I'm going to start calling it. Is right up there with repeal 17. I think both are necessary. What I like about state repeal and repeal 17, even more than repeal 16 and replace it with a consumption tax, is, you know, we are, and this is, Keith, this is one of the things I like about the idea of going all the way through with a convention of the states. Even if we do it after we've petitioned Congress, I'll guarantee you, we can get 38 states. We get 32 states. We can get 33 states to petition Congress in exact identical wording for the state repeal amendment, and we're not going to get it out of Congress. You are not going to get this amendment out of the United States House of Representatives, and you are not going to get this amendment out of the United States Senate as a proposed amendment to be forwarded to the states for ratification. You are not going to get repeal 17. And so we are going to go to convention to get these done. And the one thing I like about going to convention, the one solid outcome of going to convention and coming out with one or more of these amendments is this. Don't think for a minute, given the nature of humanity, don't think for a minute, given everything that we know about how republics work, that in 250 years, our great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren aren't going to be doing this same thing. No matter what we do to fix it now, no matter how perfect a union we establish in the next 15 to 30 years, from the rubble that's been created up to this point, don't think that 250 years from now they're not going to have to do this again. And I think that may be the reason why we need to go to convention now. But what I like about these three amendments in particular, and particularly these top two, is that it gives a really clean start to the next 250 years. People are going to have to work really, really, really hard to get us to the point we are today from coming out of a convention with these top two amendments in place.
It sure does give our, you know, the next generation or two, you know, an opportunity to start on a totally different level. I'm learning more about this amendment all the time, and I'm trying to think how that would work and how, you know, there's definitely decisions back that courts have made in the past, certainly legislation as well, that have caused us a lot of problems, and I'm trying to think, you know, for a time it might be kind of chaotic until, I mean, there may be people who will support the repeal or state powers repeal on a number of things, and some will be able to, some will not. But it's interesting. Oh, yeah. As I talk to people today, It was just amazing. That really resonated with them, and I'm amazed that as Lloyd has discussed this and explained it, it's almost like he has. I can't wait for someday to sit in a room and maybe get a chance to introduce or let Lloyd visit with Mark Meckler. If you go back and listen to Mark Meckler's interview at Patrick Henry College, and it's lengthy, and there's several topics that he discusses. It starts off with is basically, a lot more than maybe you want to know about Mark Meckler, but the whole interview, at one point, he explains this decision almost word for word the way Lloyd does. It comes down to who gets to decide. If you listen to the third part of The Real Deal, which is a fellow town hall meeting on conventionofspace.com, if you go to the third part where Mark Meckler talks a few nights ago, he explains this exactly in the same terms, who gets to decide. And frankly, I've heard both of them say, this is the common ground. There are people, I explain this to people today, and it just rolled off my tongue, and they could get it. There are people who may not agree with you on anything, in terms of some of the issues we could bring up. And there are people who, if you would take a show of hands, that they would be opposite you every time. But when you ask the people in the room to stand, if you want Washington, D.C. to make the decisions, you're going to be able to hear a pin drop and nobody's going to move. And when you say, I talked to a lot of people from Kansas and Missouri today, I said, when you say, please stand if you want the decision to be made in Topeka and Jefferson City, every person in the room is going to stand up because they're tired of Washington, D.C.'s mandates and centralized top-down government. They're just tired of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you will get some people to stand at some point just because they're getting checks from D.C., but I'm fairly cynical in that regard. But I hear what you're saying. The polls overwhelmingly show that the American people for decades have wanted less power in Washington, more with the states. They feel closer to them. They understand the diversity. They understand the difficulty of trying to get one-size-fits-all for a nation of 300 million. We're going to end up with a dictatorship if we keep that up. And they're scared of it, yeah. And so the polls are overwhelmingly, they want more stuff done at state levels. And what they don't understand is how did we get to this point? What mechanisms do we need in order to fix that problem? Because they keep voting and it ain't getting it done. And, they're confused and they think, this is what everybody wants, but it doesn't happen. Why? And that's really the frustration. It's a very dangerous situation. Very important to have solutions in hand, I believe, so that they'll see there's ways to do this. We're just not doing it the right way, that's all. But,
You mentioned
and
polls.
And, will we need a convention to do it? Yeah, I mean, the current Congress, yeah, I can't see them doing it. What I will caution you is that we've used the convention, the amendment convention process twice to force Congress to act, both the 17th Amendment and I believe the 22nd Amendment, maybe even the 16th. I'm not sure about that one. But I believe those two, you can show that Congress did not act until they were faced with an application for an amendment convention by the states. And at that point, they backed down and said, well, okay, fine, we'll do it. I believe this Congress would be similar. I believe they are not as principled as you might think. I believe they're pretty gutless in a lot of ways. And I think if 34 states stare them down in their own parties even, I mean, we're talking both Republican and Democrat parties in order to get to that number, right? So I think you're looking at as a grassroots rebellion, and they will back down, yeah.
You mentioned polls. Was mentioned the other night that 66% of people think that government is too big, and a number that I couldn't really fathom. Supposedly, and I don't know what poll that was. It could have been Fox News, but a poll that was taken fairly recently, 77% consider the government to be to threaten their liberty, or the government threaten their freedom. That the greatest threat to freedom is the government. That's to me is that's three four. That's over three fourths of the folks who have that worry. That's pretty amazing.
I mean, that's not just Republican, right-wing, Tea Party nuts. That's everybody, Dan. I mean, that's even Claire McCaskill voters in there somewhere, guys. I mean, that's a fact. So, yeah, this is stuff that – and that's the paradox of our elections, is how can something be so overwhelmingly a concern of the American people and yet it just never gets addressed, you know? And that is a – that's one of the other problems we need to fix. We need to look serious. I think this is where the left traditionally has been better than we've been on the so-called right. They tend to look at election reforms more. They tend to look at, I mean, ever since the progressives, if they had a strength, that was their strength. They really did look at election reforms. They tried to get the system more representative. They gave women the vote. They pushed for blacks to have the vote. These are good things, not bad things, obviously. And here, we do need election reforms. Typically, the progressives always look for big government answers to everything, right? So we listen to it and go, yeah, right, like more government spending is going to solve this problem. It's not. But we should nevertheless fully look at this and realize we have a problem here. And we need to start looking at election reforms from the right, so to speak, from the small government perspective, and understand there's something broken in the election process as well. Something is deeply wrong when 70% of any society wants X, and X just never happens, and they keep voting for it, and it's like it never happens still. I've witnessed this on eminent domain issues. I witnessed it here in Missouri on the funding of the Cardinals Stadium, and it was overwhelmingly, you know, people hate eminent domain abuse. They hate it. It's 80% against, and it still happens. And the Cardinal Stadium, believe it or not, I mean, I'm a Cardinal fan. I'm St. Louis, right? And I've been a Cardinal fan since I was 7 years old. But I don't want that stadium publicly funded either. And that was overwhelmingly what the poll showed, and it still happens. So we have – there's some problems in our election system, and we need to start thinking more about that, too. That doesn't require a constitutional amendment, in my opinion. That's why I haven't brought that stuff up, because I don't believe the election reforms we need require that problem is not in the Constitution. It lies elsewhere. We can fix it, and I have ideas, but they are not constitutional amendment ideas. So I just, you know, don't talk about them.
801, 803, time for a break. We're going to be right back. This is the easiest talk show to host right here. I've had to say almost nothing tonight. You folks can thank Lloyd and Keith for that, because I know you hate talking to me. If you'd like to talk to either one of these fellows, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835.
Come the archer. Come the
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You see the lambs in the ghetto who worship their Geppetto, believing you never seen the strings they think bind them. So we write to our congressmen with bleeding pins of the sorrow within, and pretend they just send tickets to the latest Tom Hanks show.
All right, we're back. We've got Lloyd and Keith here. I am going to take a couple of minutes here before we get back into it. Tonight, I missed, I'm here with you folks tonight, and I am giving up a chance to go to the candlelight vigil for young Haley. A young girl who was tragically taken from us. Now, I know most of you folks, Lloyd's off in the big city. Most of you folks live in smaller cities than me, but something like that in a city the size of Springfield, Missouri is a shattering thing. I want to send out our condolences to the family. I've lost sleep over this myself. I mean, my mind just goes to what goes through a 10-year-old girl's mind in that 4 hours between when she was abducted by a total stranger and when he took her life. It's a horrible thing. I'm there with you folks out there tonight in spirit, and if one of you runs across one of those Westboro people that are out there, tell them that that Dave said go screw yourself. I believe in your right to speech. I believe in your rights to religion. I believe in your rights to freedom of assembly. But I'll use my right to religion to say, you people just need to go to hell out there. God didn't punish Missouri by taking this little girl. Back to the break that we just had. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a totally volunteer coalition. Nobody here gets a salary, so I want to preface that when I say we raise money for only one thing. I mean, any expenses that are part of our political grassroots work, we take out of our own pockets. We print our own pamphlets at home on our printers. We raise money for only one thing, and that is the Secret Santa. Secret Santa has been a tremendous success for us in the past. This last year, we took a little hit on it, and everyone took a little hit. I mean, the red buckets were dry, the Toys for Tots was dry, and we were a little dry. But that's why we at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we do this all year. All year, any time of the year, when you find that you can make a small contribution to this, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button and use PayPal right there to send us whatever you can afford, whenever you can afford it. We drag this thing out all year. We talk about it only here on the show, on the Facebook page. There's no money goes into promotion. No money goes into distribution. No money goes into anything. 100% of anything you donate goes straight to the Secret Santa program. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And then one more minute. I've got to take care of some admin stuff here. Missouri Grassroots Radio is on other times. You don't just have to listen to me when you tune into Missouri Grassroots Radio. On Tuesday night, Cynthia Davis comes along with the home front. She talks about the assault on the basic American unit, the American family. She talks about all things conservative. Then on Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, comes along with many, many, many interesting guests and fun things to listen to and serious things to listen to. Very educational. Talks about the conservative culture. And then I'll be back on Friday of next week with another exciting lineup. We talk about state sovereignty specifically on Friday and Saturday nights at 7 o'clock. I happen to think we get some darn good guests here, don't you, Lloyd?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Don't you, Keith?
Not tonight, but most nights, yeah.
I'm having a great time. I'm having a great time with you guys. Okay, so here we go. Back to, this is totally and completely about, I think we do ourselves a favor if we keep all the talk about constitutional amendments, if we keep all the talk about a convention of the states with constitutional amendments in mind when we convene, if we keep all of our thinking directed toward that one premise, state sovereignty, in regaining the Constitution and getting the Constitution back to the states. If we get the power to govern back to the states, with the exception of the powers that we recognize, flashing back to Philadelphia, flashing back to what was wrong with the Articles of Confederation, it was a recognized thing that there were some very specific things that 13 independent sovereigns couldn't do on their own. They can't make treaties with foreign countries. You can't have 13 countries making treaties with foreign powers. You can't have 50 sovereign states coining their own money. You can't have 50 sovereign states, deciding who owns the Mississippi River. You can't have 50 sovereign states charging each other tariffs for import and export across state lines. These very specific things that were about to tear the Union apart are things that needed to be centralized, that were outside the power of independent states. But everything else should be sovereign to the states, to the government closest to the people. And if we keep our eye, in my mind, on that ball, we can't go wrong. If we start throwing in, if we keep our eye on that ball, term limits will take care of themselves. If we keep our eye on that ball, balancing the budget will take care of itself. In my mind, 99% of the problems go away if we keep our eye on that ball. So we come up with a tendency, and I see that in our state constitution here in Missouri. Our chat room is full of people from other states. But I see that problem here in Missouri of trying to legislate at a constitutional level, and Lloyd and Keith have both mentioned this on several occasions tonight, and I see that as a danger of a wide open convention. Don't both of you?
You want me to answer first and then turn it to Keith?
Yeah, go ahead, Lloyd.
I want Lloyd to do it for I want to hear what Lloyd has to say.
All right. Okay. Well. Okay. Yeah. All ears are on me. Okay. That's great. Okay. Oh, two things. I'll say one thing, just and then answer your question directly. But it's kind of, sovereignty is a word that I don't use very much. It's kind of medieval, and I avoid it. I believe, you know, and I understand what you're saying by it, and I agree with the sentiments behind it. But the true sovereign in a democracy are the people. And I would never refer to governments as being sovereign in that regard. I think that's a mistake. So states are not sovereign. The federal government is not sovereign. The people of this country are sovereign. And they make the – it's we, the people of the United States, who established that Constitution. They are the ultimate sovereign. What we have is federalism. It is a unique American – somewhat American invention. It does exist in other places, but we truly put a unique stamp on our federalism, the way we structured it, and it is a balance of power thing. And it's like the sovereign people of America have said, we want these things done by the federal government, so we delegate them to do this, and we want these things done by states. And incidentally, most of it we gave to states, not you guys, the feds, okay? And that sovereign people in America have got to decide, do you still want that original framework? Do you still want that original balance or not? And they say in the polls they do, but that's the problem to solve. So I would say that the sovereign American people must decide on a state-by-state basis if you want, but, you know, however they decide, they've got to decide how much do you want the feds to do, meaning the national government, and how much do you want the states to do. And that's where the state repeal amendment is, to help tip that balance back the way I think most people want it to go. Now, as far as the convention, that's a good question. You know, can you limit an amendment convention? I don't think you can limit it other than the way the Constitution, the way I read it, limits it. If you read Article 5, I mean, Article 5 sets up two ways that we can propose amendments. Two-thirds of Congress can do it, or two-thirds of states can apply to Congress to call a convention for proposing amendments. There is no provision in the Constitution whatsoever to rewrite the thing. Okay? None. And we may face a time down the road where we do have to rewrite the Constitution. I don't believe we're there yet, so I'm not even going to propose such a thing. I'll leave that to future generations to solve if they have to do it. I believe we can fix our problems with just amendments, and I believe that, you know, one of the ways to do that would be a convention, which we've never done before. I'm not sure you can limit that convention and say, well, you can only propose these amendments or those amendments. I doubt it. I mean, I think once you call the convention, they can probably propose whatever amendments they want to propose. They have a very extreme power to me in the Constitution. It's very important to understand why the founders did what they did, too. And I realize this is archaic history. I'm even discovering people disagree on it, and I don't think most Americans even know this history. And I'm not even sure how important it is. But I will say, I believe the Constitution is more revolutionary than most Americans recognize. And they're not taught this in the schools, in my opinion. I think Keith may disagree with that. He may think that they teach a different doctrine, but when I was a kid, they didn't get into this at all. They didn't really tell people. The founders really did an almost second revolution when they did the Constitution, and in their view, they had no choice. As you pointed out, the Articles of Confederation were breaking apart. Each state was sovereign under the Articles. The language is actually in there. It says in the Articles of Confederation, each state retained its sovereignty. You can imagine trying to get these states to work together when you have now put a rule in there that each one is still sovereign and can pretty much ignore you anytime they want anyway. So good luck getting them to pay taxes. Good luck getting them to pay for the debts that they accumulated the whole bit. It is a major problem, and that's what the founders faced. They also knew that in order to amend the Articles, it had to be unanimous. That's what the article said. You have to be unanimous. That's impossible. They're never going to get unanimity. They tried. They tried several times to amend the articles. Please give them credit. They didn't just jump off and do this. There were two amendment proposals for taxes. One was vetoed by New York. The other one was vetoed by Rhode Island. So they had tried. They tried an Annapolis convention to amendment that way. You know, maybe come up with that idea. That didn't work. So eventually, George Washington, you know, joins the crowd and says, we're going to have to do more. You know, we're going to have to fix these articles. And that means a whole fresh start. Yeah, and that's what they did, and I think it was perfectly legitimate. I've got to point out, we don't face that same situation. We are not in the situation that the founders were in. Thank God they gave us a pretty good constitution. That constitution is still workable, in my opinion, and can be amended. I realize we're not following it as we should, but it still is a framework, and far better than the founders didn't even have a framework to change the articles. That's different. And Hamilton points that out many times. I think it's one of the strongest arguments Hamilton makes, because the anti-federalists that are opposing the Constitution, they're basically saying they have legitimate concerns. In fact, we would be remiss if we did not admit that the concerns of the anti-federalists have come true in many ways.
Exactly.
So let us not poo-poo the anti-federalists and laugh at them too hard, because they were pretty good prophets, as it turns out. You know, and they got a few things right. They were certainly right on the Bill of Rights, too, in my opinion. So they have some strengths here. But the strongest argument Hamilton made was, look, if we reject this Constitution, where does that leave us? It puts us right – I mean, even though this Constitution is flawed, and it is, and he admitted it was, nevertheless, if we don't pass this, we're back on the Articles, and we know we can't even amend those things. So if nothing else, this Constitution is a better foundation to build the nation on than what we have today. And I believe that foundation is still strong. I'm not trying to change that foundation. I'm trying to amend it, not do away with it. And the Constitution of States people are not trying to get rid of our Constitution, for crying out loud. That is not true, and it's not going to happen. That is a false attack. It is alarmist. It is designed. I mean, it's frankly just flat out incorrect. And it bothers me when I hear those kind of attacks. That is not what any of the Constitution of States people are trying to do. They've never advocated that. Mark Levin isn't advocating that. Michael Ferris isn't advocating that. That's just nonsense. So I'll stop.
You mean convention of the states?
Yeah, what did I say? I didn't know what I said there, but yeah, that's what I meant. Was no one, I mean, literally no one is advocating at this time that we rewrite the Constitution of the United States. And that's really what a runaway convention means, isn't it? I mean, you ask people, what do you mean by a runaway convention? Do you mean they're going to propose amendments that we don't like? Okay, so what if they do? So we don't pass them, you know? That's minor to me. The true runaway convention is one that says, here's your worst nightmare. Okay, they have a convention, and they say, we are going to rewrite this Constitution completely, and we are going to put it, and our rule is we are going to put it to a vote of the American people, up or down. That's your worst nightmare, in my opinion. And that's not going to happen. And let's be honest. Are they authorized to do that under the Constitution? Absolutely not.
No.
That Constitution is very clear that they don't have that power, and frankly, Congress doesn't have that power either. The convention has no different a power than Congress has. And Congress is a walking runaway convention every day, right? Because they could, in theory, propose any amendment they want to propose, Congress can do. So what? You know, it's not as big a deal as people think. The real risk here, people, we got to start talking about this, is if we continue along the path that we're on today. Is that not the real risk for this country? I mean, you know, are you happy with the way things are going? We have to act, people. I hate to say this because I grew up with conservatives, and that's what, you know, I was raised by Goldwater conservatives. You know, lots of friends are conservative. But there is an element in conservatism that is simply knee-jerk, we ain't never going to change anything, you can't make me. That is hardly a strength in life, okay? Some things, when things are broken, you got to change them. And if your attitude is constantly, no, 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 I don't change anything, that is an attitude of death. That is an attitude that a rock has, not a human being, not a life, not a living, breathing thing. And we need to improve this system. We need to make changes to it, people. It's not working. Okay, end of rant.
End of rant. No.
Yeah.
Hey, I know. I was gonna. I want to get to a question, but before I do, I want to make sure that everybody realizes that there is nothing that I can say to improve on the discourse on sovereignty right there to say that the people is the only sovereign. And, you know, the only possible example of a runaway convention was a state one in which some folks got in their head that the state, that the convention was somehow sovereign. And they weren't sovereign either. The people were sovereign, but they got it in their head. And that was a state convention. And certainly the process on the national level with the convention of states, in which states are sending their own delegates. You know, nobody can control. You know, we might be able to influence the Missouri delegates because we're in Missouri. We can at least who's selected or what their instructions may be. But we have absolutely no say in terms of what the Nebraska and New Mexico and Wisconsin delegates, you know, they're basically, they're going to be selected by their state as a, you know, through their residual sovereignty, and they're going to be given instructions by the people of Wisconsin, the people of Nebraska, and that's the process, is the strength, and Lloyd's exactly right. There's not going to be a runaway convention, but we have a runaway convention every day. Rob Nadelson is the person who says, you know, he's very honest, and he's low-key. And he says, you know, I'll be honest, there's certain things I just can't tell you with absolute 100% certainty, except for one. And that is, if we don't use this process, we will lose the republic. And he really believes that, and I've come to think he's right, exactly. But I wanted to ask a question, you know, and this gets a little bit deep. And you may recall, and you may have to refer to an email that we had, Lloyd, not long ago, but you mentioned how the state repeal amendment addresses some of the concerns. You know, Jefferson Davis had some concerns, some things that he couldn't overcome, and ultimately, you know, Civil War was seemed to be the only answer. But you said that if the state repeal amendment had been in effect then, it would address most of the concerns in some way. I have to confess, don't have that in front of me, and it may be a little too deep for the program this evening, but maybe at some point we can address that, because I found it really interesting, if you have a minute on that.
Yeah, I misspoke if I said that. I think the state repeal amendment is actually ideal for our time. I don't know that it could have prevented the Civil War. It depends on whether or not the South would have accepted the decision of the state repeal amendment to get rid of the Dred Scott decision, if you will, because the Dred Scott decision was the real problem. And, you know, then the South kind of wanted to use this court. But granted, the state repeal amendment is not ideal for doing Supreme Court decisions, but say for instance, we had an extra beefed-up state repeal and we let states do this kind of stuff, then the question is, would the South accept that as a judgment? If they would, then you could have avoided Civil War, because that's exactly what would have happened. And the northern states would have said, forget this, we're going to let Dred Scott stand, so we're getting rid of that. And then if the South says, that's fine, that's legit, we'll accept that, then I think you're fine. I think as long as the South, the slave states, say, no, slavery's a right, we think it's a right in the Constitution, we think we have a right to take slaves into Kansas and Nebraska, period, into the territories, if you disagree, you're breaking the original contract, the original Constitution that we thought we had signed, so to speak, and we're out of here. And, you can't resolve it that way. If that's what the South truly was committed to, then they are on a path to secession, because the North is not going to agree with that. And I think the North's right, to be honest with you. I think the North has the stronger case. It's pretty clear to me that the territories at the time should have been regulated by Congress. They are U.S. territories. They're not state territories. We tried the popular sovereignty as a compromise. That is certainly something Congress can do if they want. But Congress also, we must admit then, has the power to prohibit slavery in those territories if they want to do it. And since the South insisted, no, you can't, that's the issue. It's so small of an issue somewhat. It seems so technical and theoretical, you wonder, is it really worth killing 300,000 or 600,000 people over that? I mean, well, they, you know, that's why wars happen. Does anybody remember how We're in the 100th anniversary this August of World War One. Anybody remember how it started? You know, what actually triggered that stupidity and killed half of Europe? Because the Serbians shot an archduke of Austria-Hungary, okay? And that plunged the world into the worst war it had ever seen in its history. This is the stupidity sometimes that happens. I'm off the subject. I have a question for you. When Nadelson says that unless we use this, the Republic is lost, would he count using it as a threat to force Congress to act? Because that's maybe the only place I differ with him. I do believe this is a very important provision, but I'm not sure that I'm still not convinced we must go all the way. I think that has yet to be proven. But it is a definite tool in the arsenal. I don't disagree with that.
Well, I can't speak for Robert Nadelson and wouldn't even assume to, but from what I've been able to gather, not only Robert Nadelson, but several folks in the Convention of States leadership, I gather, and I've asked this question, no matter what, you know, obviously history shows in every case, Congress responds. They do. They wait to the last minute. They try to defuse the movement. They try to defuse the convention. And in nearly every case, well, in every case, that's what they've done. And this, I think there's a feeling that no matter what Congress does at this point, we want to have a convention to get rid of this idea that's never happened before. Now, I don't think that Robert would say that it's not a legitimate use to use it to get Congress's attention. It's been used before, and he frankly is the one that says, you know, it's not correct to say that it hasn't been used before, because it has in that situation put pressure on Congress.
These are
the hard questions that I have for people who scare me only in that we've had this argument before, and so I don't want to have it again, but you know, when people say the convention is an end in itself, I know it's not, and I'll never see it that way, I guess. So I think that's the wrong way to think. And it means that I could come up to Mr. Nadelson and say, are you telling me that if I can get a state repeal amendment, if I can change the 17th Amendment, if I can get rid of the income tax and, you know, get a balanced budget amendment or whatever is what you think is so important, and I get those things, you still are going to insist on a convention?
No. I absolutely think that would be silliness. You know, to some
extent. Of course
extent,
it would.
Unless it was silliness, unless it had strings attached. And Lincoln Congress, you know, the Franklin folks just don't trust Congress. And I don't, you know, and that may be, they usually have some kind of backdoor deal or strings attached. And I can't speak for him exactly. And I wouldn't have.
Well, here's the thing to remember. We're no longer talking about federal legislation. We're talking about amendments to the Constitution. There will be no strings attached to a constitutional amendment, such as the state repeal amendment, that gets ratified by 38 states. I mean, that is the ultimate. So if Congress sends out a proposal that you can have your state repeal amendment, but you're going to have 49 states, all but one, it doesn't get ratified, and Congress goes back to the drawing board, or we go to convention. I mean, I'm with Lloyd, I guess, on that one. I think that, you know, if we can use a petition to Congress with 30, 31, 32. The Equal Rights Amendment is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. I mean, it was a movement. It was a national movement. It was one of those things that history was uniquely ripe for. It was a period in time when the vast majority of Americans would have just looked at that on the front page of the newspaper and said, oh, yeah, that's probably a pretty good idea. We were moving toward a convention on that. And the Congress passed an Equal Rights Amendment that was designed to mitigate the demands that was designed to appease without going all the way to what the feminist movement wanted. And they could not, even after two extensions, get a 38-state ratification on that. I'm not scared that when Congress proposes amendments, they're going to foist something or pull some wool over somebody's eyes or force the states to take something less than what they demand.
Sure. I want to throw in just kind of a comment. You know, Michael Ferris was actually helped litigate. He was a young attorney, and that was early in his career, but he actually is one of the few people alive today that actually have litigated an Article 5 case in court in that particular level. And so he tells a story of, you know, his research is going back to all the ratification of all of the amendments after the Bill of Rights. He went back, and that was his part of the, that's what he did. And so early in his career, he had a big exposure to this process. I want to let folks know a little bit of news on the Convention of States, if you got just a moment. I know we're going to run out of time, but conventionofstates.com has a new look and a new action center. You'll be able to go on and see what's happening in individual states. You may not know, but Georgia has passed the resolution calling for a convention of states for the purpose of restraining the power and scope and jurisdiction of the federal government in both the House and the Senate. And it has to go to one more step, or some language maybe a little bit different, and has to be brought together. But that's, you know, they're not officially the first state yet, and so there's a couple of states that are working to try to be the first state. Not that it really matters to me who's the first state, but you can go to and catch up on what's happening in each individual state. In some states it's in the committee, some states it's in one house or the other. You can get the House bill number, the Senate bill number, and do research if you're interested in looking at what's happening with those individual states. But I urge you to go back and look and listen to The Real Deal, different series, town hall meetings, and listen to what, you know, Mark Meckler, Rob Nadelson, or even Michael Ferris has to say about, you know, and that's, we're talking about some, their positions in some cases. I think it's really better that we get it from them, and encourage you to do that.
Okay, we're going to start winding down here now by people being forced to listen to me talk for a couple of minutes. I know Lloyd hates the word sovereign, and this is what it's all about.
I think it's very applicable to a medieval king.
Well. You know, actually, what sovereignty means, brothers and sisters, is this. You know, and yeah, okay, the people are sovereign. I'll say that's great. The people are sovereign. Some number of people have to tell me that I can't sit outside in my front yard naked on Monday morning while the kids walk by to school. Some level of government has to be able to make that rule. Some level of government, some level cooperative of people has to be able to say, my right to bear arms stops when I set up a 50 cal on my front porch, or when I plant claymore mines in my front yard. That is the level that is sovereign over me. There is a level of government that makes the rules that you and I live by to avoid an anarchy. The huge discussion was, what level of government is that to be? That was the concern of the Federalists, and as Lloyd pointed out, that has become a prophecy. There are people now saying, you know, and Lloyd and I were discussing this the other day, we need to we need to go back to city states. Well, the closer to the people you get, everyone isn't their own sovereign. That is a fact. I am not my own sovereign, and you are not your own sovereign, or we're talking about me planting Claymore mines in my front yard because the neighborhood kids keep chasing their balls over here. We're talking about me driving down Interstate 44 at 160 miles an hour just because I like speed. We're talking about people being able to stick heroin in their veins and then drive down the street at rush hour. Some level of government has to make the rules. I hear a lot from the sovereignty people, the people are sovereign people, that basically says, well, this or that isn't a function of government. At some level, some cooperative of sovereign people have to decide what is and is not a proper function of government. You know, we do not govern a country based on God-given rights. We don't govern a state based on 'cause the Bible told me so. At some level, power has to exist to say, you are not, in this particular case, your own sovereign. We make the rules. I want to be clear to people that that's what I mean when I say state sovereignty. I mean, we decided some 250 years ago, and rightly in my mind, that that power belongs closest to you and me. That's what I campaign for. That's what I hope to get out of this convention. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're after all of that, we're going to let Lloyd and Keith have a last word, and then we're all going to go home for the night.
Market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Riding round, people on the stand for that, but just
Now, that's my take, and I say that not to argue or be right, although, you know, hell, it's my show, I'm right. But I say that because I think it's important, you know, it's important that if we're going to communicate, brothers and sisters, that you understand what's in my head when I say something. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. Keith, as always, it's a pleasure to have you here. I'm telling you, we appreciate the hard work you're doing out there. I know, again, today you were out. You missed Lincoln Days, I take it.
Sure. Yeah. My brother kind of got involved. He went to Lincoln Days and spent a little time with John Putnam and got a report back, and that went well received there.
Did COS, did COS have a booth at Lincoln Days?
We did, and there was T-shirts and some other things, just trying to have a presence, and you know, we kind of put some things together. It's kind of interesting. In a lot of ways, Missouri is not in the lead. Legislatively, we're going to drop a bill, I think, this week, and I look for it to have a lot of sponsors promising more than, you know, the rule is promise a little and deliver a lot. But I think I'm pretty excited about it. But in a lot of ways, Missouri is ahead of other states in terms of getting out and you know, I'm not taking any credit for that. I would give John Putnam 90% of the credit, 99% of the credit for all that as far as what's going on. But I really enjoyed today and visiting with people. I was getting some thought about not being at the Kansas City Farm Show. I have a business interest there, but I thought, you know, I've been coming several years, but as I talk to people, I realize how much I enjoyed talking to people and seeing their response and seeing them begin to get a feel for what's possible.
You're up around KC, aren't you?
I live south of Clinton.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes south of Clinton, Missouri.
Closer to me than you are to KC, then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for coming, Keith. You're welcome back anytime. We're here every Friday and Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
Well, Dave, I'm sorry that your browser kind of gave you a trouble today, and we didn't let you talk. Sometimes I apologize. Give me a hard time about that.
This is the easiest talk show job in the world right here. All I got to do is turn on the tubes and then let you guys go. I don't have to do much work at all for this kind of stuff.
Thanks for what you do.
All right, Lloyd. That's pretty much going to take care of tonight. I think we covered a bit.
Yep, great to be on again. So appreciate
thanks
for
coming
to talk about important issues. Wake up the American people on the Constitution.
I think that's
their Constitution.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.
All right, bye bye. Good night, folks.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. How do I get